I had nearly finished a glass of juice before I let myself look at the little highway of broken graham crackers and marshmallow bits that May was constructing across the floor. How it started at the sink and angled toward the door, thick with golden crumbs and smudges of sticky white. "The roaches will follow this out the door," May said. "It works every time." I don't know how long I stared at the line on the floor, at May's face turned toward mine, eager for me to say something, but I couldn't think what to say. The room filled with the steady whir of the refrigerator motor. I felt a strange, thick feeling inside, a memory. I stood there waiting, letting it come. "Your mother was a lunatic when it came to bugs," T-Ray had said. "She used to make trails of graham cracker crumbs and marshmallows to lure roaches outside." I looked again at May. My mother couldn't have learned the roach trick from May, I thought. Could she? Ever since I'd set foot in the pink house, some part of me had kept believing that my mother had been here. No, not believing it so much as daydreaming it and running it through a maze of wishful thinking. But now the actual possibility seemed to be right in front of me. It seemed so far-fetched, crazy. It couldn't be, I thought again. I walked over and sat down at the table. Shadows from late afternoon pushed into the room. They were peach-tinted, fading in and out, and the kitchen was completely silent. Even the refrigerator hum had died away. May had turned back to her work. She seemed oblivious to me sitting there. My mother could have learned it from a book. Maybe from her mother. How did I know that households everywhere didn't use this particular roach-witting method? I stood up and walked over to May. I felt a trembly feeling at the back of my knees. I put my hand on her shoulder. "Okay," I thought. "Here goes." I said, "May, did you ever know a Deborah? Deborah Fontenelle? A white woman from Virginia? It would have been a long time ago." There wasn't a trace of cunning in May, and you could depend on her not to overthink her answers. She didn't look up, didn't pause, just said, "Oh yes, Deborah Fontenelle. She stayed out there in the honey house. She was the sweetest thing." And there it was. There it all was. For a moment, I felt lightheaded. I had to reach for the countertop to steady myself. Down on the floor, the trail of crumbs and marshmallows looked half alive. I had a million more questions, but May had started humming, "Oh, Susanna." She set down the box of crackers and got up slowly, starting to sniffle. Something about Deborah Fontenelle had set her off. "I think I'll go out to the wall for a little while," she said. And that's how she left me, standing in the kitchen, hot and breathless, the world tilted under me. Walking to the honey house, I concentrated on my feet touching down on the hard-caked dirt in the driveway, the exposed tree roots, fresh-watered grass, how the earth felt beneath me, solid, alive, ancient, right there every time my foot came down. There, and there, and there, always there. The things a mother should be. Oh yes, Deborah Fontenelle. She stayed out there in the honey house. She was the sweetest thing. In the honey house, I sat on the cot with my knees drawn up, hugging them with my arms and making a shelf for the side of my face to rest on. I looked at the floor and the walls with brand new eyes. My mother had walked about in this room, a real person. Not somebody I made up, but a living, breathing person. The last thing I expected was to fall asleep, but when there's a blow to the system, all the body wants to do is go to sleep and dream on it. I woke an hour or so later in the velvety space where you don't yet remember what you dreamed. Then suddenly the whole thing washed back to me.